This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. When Supinda Keith and her husband Kevin Hicks started a youth cycling group last year, they didn't realize how far it would take them. Now they know. 1,800 miles. That's the distance they rode this summer with a group of 9 students from Chapel Hill High School. And this wasn't just any bike route. They were following the path of the Underground Railroad from Mobile, Alabama to Niagara Falls, New York. Like the escaped slaves of the 1800s, they often had to rely on the kindness of strangers. Unlike the slaves, they made the trip in just 33 days. They call themselves the Spokane Revolutions, and they recently received the Golden Spoke Award for top cyclist at the annual Triangle Commuter Awards. They're here to talk about their experiences. Supinda Keith and Kevin Hicks, co-founders of Spoken Revolutions, welcome to you. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Also with us, two of the student cyclists, Chris Dargan and Jamie Salazar. Welcome to State of Things. So great to have you.
Thank you.
Supinda, tell us about why you and Kevin started Spoken Revolutions.
When we moved to Chapel Hill in 2006, we got very involved in the community, and we moved to Chapel Hill because of the school district, all the things that it has to offer to the students. Great test scores, wonderful community. And both of us being advocates for children coming out of inner city Atlanta, we sort of started looking at the district from a different perspective. And we recognized that there was a need to provide more opportunities for lower income students. And so the idea of the cycling program came up because I love cycling. And anybody who gets on a bike, I don't care if you're 50 or 5, you feel like, you know, you're 10 again. And so we thought, you know, let's get kids on bikes. Let's find some bikes to get those kids on, and let's do something kind of crazy, and let's give them a challenge and have them do something that, you know, they could do, that they could say, wow, we did something different and we did something special.
Well, so Kevin, how does that take us to the Underground Railroad?
Well, that's difficult. It's mm-hmm. special. The kids chose the route, and it has historical value.
Right. So, and when you say the kids chose the route, let me ask you about this. Chris, were you involved in this? How did that happen? How did the discussion about what to do now that you're on the bikes come about?
Well, we knew we wanted to do something big for the summer, and Adventure Cycling had already mapped out a few routes. So we decided to choose the Underground Railroad because it had the most historical significance.
Jamie, it's an 1,800-mile ride.
Yes.
Did that occur to you when you thought about this historically significant trip?
It did. It gave us a way to just kind of trace back on the history. And we chose the longest route because we felt going through there we were going to meet and see new places that will help us be more connected to the history rather than just reading it from a book.
Because it's about 60 miles a day, right? I mean, if I got my math right.
That was the idea. We originally mapped a 30-day route at 60 miles a day. So, yeah, 1,800 miles.
But let me ask you, Chris, had you done much biking before this?
No.
No?
Just with the group, but not touring at all.
So did anybody say, that's going to be hard, for instance? Because that's what I would have said. I would have said, that's going to be hard.
I mean, we knew it was going to be a challenge, but we embraced it, so.
So that was never a problem, the
Now, there
the
were
distance.
Some people who questioned our sanity.
Yeah.
But last year when we went to Eatonton with event on Cycle NC's Spring Ride Tour, that was our first foray into adventure cycling for the kids. And they enjoyed that so much, we were looking for something else for them to do. We couldn't get ourselves together after a summer break to do the Mountains to the Coast ride. But when we looked through routes and presented it to them, they weren't daunted because they knew they could do 60 miles. And 60 miles a day, we just chop it up into 30 small bites. We could do that. We weren't taking into consideration that some days were in 100-degree temperatures mm-hmm. and in hills. And
well, the Eatonton trip also, they were the youngest group of students there. The average rider was 50 and older. On you know, really nice, really expensive bicycles. And these kids were on recycled mountain bikes. And they did their 60 miles. And at the end of the day, they were a little discouraged. And they said, you know, so those people were flying by us. And
they were 60 years old.
And they were 60 years old. That's and we rough. Said, well, I said, you guys are on mountain bikes. They're on road bikes. And at that moment, they got hooked. And they said, oh, my, we want to be on road bikes. What do we need to do to get on road bikes? And that was when we sort of then moved to the next phase of getting them on road bikes and preparing them for this journey.
What did you need to do to make that transfer?
Well, we had to make sure we all were in agreement that we wanted to continue riding. Mm-hmm. And then Miss Sue and Kevin kind of got more connections, and then we decided to build our road bikes and do more rides, and we all ended up enjoying it. So that's when, like, the whole huge idea of let's have another big ride, and it came to be the Underground Railroad.
So what's a typical day like for you, Chris?
On the road?
On the road, yeah. And the Underground Railroad trip.
All right, well, it starts by Kevin. He always has a unique way of waking us up, maybe singing, clapping, flickering the lights, pulling our blankets over us, you know. But we wake up around 5:30, 6 o'clock. We deflate our sleeping pads and, you know, put all our stuff away. And we have to make sure our bikes are ready. So, you know, make sure your tires aren't flat, anything like that, all the bike maintenance. And then after we have everything done, like with the cleaning, we eat breakfast. And then after that, we get on the road.
Where did you stay?
We stayed at many YMCAs. Local Quakers helped housed us. We camped out sometimes at national parks. And
what about the tour along the way? Because some of these spots, you are actually you're stopping at historic spots and learning what happened in those places, right?
That's right. One of the first stops that we actually got to that was an official Underground Railroad site was in Pickensville, Alabama. And people don't think of Alabama very much in terms of just the Deep South and their involvement in the Underground Railroad movement. Pickensville was a really unique little town, probably, I think, less than 500 people. And the mayor came out with her sister that morning, and they made us breakfast. And they gave us a tour of their stagecoach inn. It was a stagecoach, and that was one of the first places where they housed enslaved people. And then right behind that was a church that was built in the 1800s that was also another station for enslaved. So that was, we were probably already in our trip almost a week mm-hmm. by the time we got to our first actual Underground Railroad mm-hmm. official historic site. And then there was Maysville, Kentucky.
Was very important. We were met by Jerry Gore, who is a local historian, and Jerry had about 200 artifacts from the enslavement period. And he also lived in a home that was originally owned by a slave owner. Then it was purchased by an abolitionist who built a tunnel in their basement all the way down to the river. We got to see the tunnel. We got to see a slave prison, and there was blood still on the walls that we were able to see. That it was a dark and dank room. I think it was about 10 by 12 room with a brick floor, pretty grimy. But you can witness the atrocities that could have occurred in that room.
Chris, I'm guessing you and Jamie knew something about the Underground Railroad before you took this trip, right?
Yeah.
Studied it, had some idea. How did this trip change what you knew?
Well, in school, we actually do not learn as much about the Underground Railroad as I feel like we should. So this trip, we got a lot of, you know, new knowledge that most people wouldn't know from reading a textbook in school, because it's just like history that people overlook, but it's actually important. So we got a lot of that.
Give me an example. Tell me something that you learned that really kind of surprised you.
I did not know that once enslaved people got from the South to North that they were free, like around Ohio or Kentucky. I thought they were free. Like, I thought, okay, it's over. But actually, to like fully escape, they needed to make it all the way to Canada.
Then that's because people could hunt them down and bring them back.
Yeah, exactly.
And so so this is something that you learned on the way. And Jamie, I understand you had a teacher with you too, right?
Yes. Mr. Brogdon, he helped us along the way. He told us little bits of history of places we were. And that really helped because it helped have like a teacher who already knew this stuff. He told us while we saw what was happening rather than him lecturing us from a book, which was really great.
You know, I wonder if it makes you think differently about other history now that you've lived it, you've gone the route. This is an intense study of a particular facet of one part of American history. And yet, now that you look at everything else you've learned, do you start asking different questions about what you already know from books? Give me an example of that, just some way that you might, if it's true, and it may not be, where you're starting to rethink all of the history you've learned in terms of what would it be like to live this life.
Well, there's just like a lot of small people that we may not read about in the textbooks that made it possible for things to happen. So it's always nice to ask about like the kind of unsung heroes, mm-hmm. I guess.
Jamie, were you about to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say basically what Chris said.
So there had to be some surprises along the way. Not only were you learning history and listening to apparently Kevin sing in the morning or clap to get you up, which must have been a treat, you also had some fun and some crazy experiences along the way. What were some of the most memorable moments for you, Chris?
Well, there were a lot of dogs on the road. And,
who were not necessarily impressed with your bikes.
No,
so
yeah. They would chase us down and... Yeah, but one of the most memorable times was we were riding like we normally do, and we came to a construction zone, and the construction zone was like kind of on one lane of the road, and so there was only one lane for traffic to go through. So we decided to take the construction zone because it would be safer than having to ride in the one lane of traffic with cars. And there were quite big potholes that we all hit.
Sections of the road was missing.
Yeah, just like huge craters. Oh. And we didn't see them, and we all got flat tires. We had 9 flat tires.
Wow.
That day.
A lot of you must have had a lot of blowouts along the way. I mean, that was your worst day, no doubt. But mm-hmm. How about you, Jamie?
Okay, this is a story I tell everybody. We were in Alabama, and it was pretty hot. And Kevin and Mr. Brogdon told us it was going to be all downhill from where we were. So we started riding, and then we go down a hill, and then we go up. But once at the top of the hill, and you just look straight across, it was just like a snake. It was just like up, down, up, down. I was it was really hot. I was tired. And I was like, what type of downhill is this?
The downhill with the uphills. Now, how about that's a lot of kids along the way, and you know, high school kids. Let me ask you, Subinda, how did everybody get along?
You know, Kevin and I tell them all the time, we were so lucky this time around to get such an amazing group of kids, and you know, we had 3 girls and 6 boys, and they were incredible. And I have to say that I think a lot of that comes from just their humility. These kids are very humble. They don't have a lot, and they appreciate what they have. And so when you take a group of kids like this on the road, and they're so thankful that someone, or they're even shocked or surprised that someone's willing to pay for a meal for them, they have such graciousness. And so in terms of, you know, yeah, they were 9 teenagers, but it wasn't 9 drama-filled teenagers. These were, and I mean that. And I love working with kids like this. They make it so much. They make it so worth it for me to do stuff like this.
Did the social environment feel different for you than high school, Jamie?
I mean, we all got more closer to each other, like the whole group. I literally felt like they were my brothers and sisters, and I thought it was great. We got together. There was, like Missy said, no drama, which made the trip even better.
Yeah. You have 7 kids of your own.
We do.
And you took one of them on this trip. Now you've got, what, eight more, I guess, if I do the math.
That's right.
So a lot of kids to supervise. You didn't really get a summer vacation, I guess.
Well, no. I would say that that was probably the coolest summer vacation I've ever had. You know, people think, oh, my gosh, that's incredibly crazy and you're just insane. But for me, it wasn't anything different than what I do in my normal day-to-day, preparing meals for 7, 8, 9 of us every night is, I mean, you know, we're on the road with all these other kids, but the workload to me was no different. I still do 3 and 4 loads of laundry every day, and I did it on the road. And so, you know, for me, it was maybe if I had 1 or 2 kids, it would have been an extreme shock for me.
And you were driving along. You were doing logistics, right?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah that was somebody had to do that, get the food, do the laundry, yep. and keep everything straight. So, Kevin, what's next?
What's next is possibly Ghana.
Ghana?
Yes, taking bikes.
There's an ocean between here and there.
That's true. That's true. Okay. But and we don't have to, you know, put some paddles on the bikes. But the plan is to work with the Recyclery. That's one of our partners. And to gather maybe 20 bikes or even more if we can, maybe 100. We're working with Dr. Cousins from Owensboro. Owensboro was one of our major wonderful finds. That was a abolitionist town. So meeting with Dr. Cousins, Oberlin, Owensboro, all the towns blend together Oberlin. With the O's. But it was Oberlin, Ohio, not Owensboro, Kentucky. Yes. But Dr. Cousins, she has a plan to find a way for us to get some bikes to Ghana, and that's what our next goal is.
And we don't have time to talk about this, but I know you did community service along the way. So would that be part of the Ghana trip as well? You would do community service there as well. Congratulations, and thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you for having us.
Supinda Keith and Kevin Hicks, co-founders of Spoke and Revolutions, Chris Dargan and Jamie Salazar, members of the group. To learn more about Spoke and Revolutions, you can go to SpokenRevolutions.org, spelled SPOKEN. revolutions.org. Find out more about them. Find out about us at stateofthings.org. And that's the State of Things for today. Thank you for listening. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.